Good morning. My name is Kathy, and I'll be your operator for today's call. Welcome to the Citi-hosted Domino's Management Conference Call. As a reminder, please do not disclose any material, non-public, or confidential information about the public companies being discussed today. Today's call is being recorded, and now I'd like to turn the call over to today's host, Greg Badishkanian.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is Greg Badishkanian, Citigroup restaurant and leisure analyst. We also have Alvin Concepcion on the line, who co-covers the name here at Citigroup. And it's a real pleasure to have senior management of Domino's Pizza with us this morning. We have the Executive Vice President of International, Rich Allison, as well as Lynn Liddell, who heads up investor relations. And Rich and Lynn will give a quick, you know, 5-minute kind of overview, update, and then we'll move it into Q&A. We're going to keep the call to under a half hour. It's star one to ask a question, and you can also email me or Catherine or Alvin if you have questions as well. We'll read that anonymously. So with that, why don't I hand it over to Rich and Lynn.
Great. Thank you, Greg, and we appreciate your hosting this. I'm going to be fairly radio silent during this. It's Rich's show, so I'm just going to turn it over to him.
All right. Well, thanks, Lynn, and good morning, everyone. I'm honored to be able to talk with you today about the Domino's Pizza International business. I'm Rich Allison. I'm the Executive Vice President of our International Division, which is the fastest-growing international business in the pizza category. And before I dive into the Domino's International business, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about my background. Prior to coming to Domino's in March of 2011, I spent over 13 years at Bain & Company, where I was a partner and co-leader of our restaurant practice. And several things attracted me to Domino's, and specifically the International Division. And first, we've got a great operational model with very strong return on invested capital at the unit level. Second, this is a business with a long track record of strong sales and store growth. And finally, all this leads to a business with great cash flow characteristics. To give you a little background on our international business, Domino's is present in over 70 markets, and we had 5,327 stores as of the end of 2012. All of which are franchised. This means that we have zero corporate stores internationally. Each of our markets is granted to a qualified master franchisee who can utilize three potential income streams. First, owning and operating Domino's Pizza stores. Second, sub-franchising stores. And third is owning and operating supply chain centers. We've been highly successful with this master franchise model, as the franchisees are usually well-established business owners that are familiar with the area they are developing and running and can utilize their local market knowledge and financial resources to grow the brand and succeed. Most of our international profits are driven by franchise royalties, which averaged around 3% of top-line sales last year. In addition, we do operate six supply chain centers in our international division, four of which are in Canada. While we do operate this small number of facilities, running international commissaries is not part of our general strategy, as we prefer to leave that up to the master franchisee. In each market we develop, our goal is to be the number one pizza delivery brand. So when we pick a market, we look for three things. First, we make sure that we have a clear path to achieve scale. Second, we make sure that the market is accessible to our brand. And third, we do our research to verify that the area can be profitable for us and our master franchisee. We've been growing our store base in both emerging and developed economies around the world. Our 2-year net store growth consisted of 59% of our stores being in emerging economies and 41% of our new stores being in developed economy markets. One of the great strengths of our international business is its geographic diversity. We are not heavily concentrated in any one country or in any one region of the world. Our global diversity also means that we are less likely to be affected by individual or regional exchange rate fluctuations because our broad portfolio acts like a natural hedge. Among our franchisees, we have four publicly traded Domino's Pizza Master franchisees that make up more than half of our international store count. The four public franchisees include our franchisee for India, our UK master franchisee, which also owns the German market, our Mexican master franchisee, which also owns rights to Colombia, and our Australian master franchisee, who also owns the rights to New Zealand, France, the Netherlands, and Belgium. We have been successful in our expansion internationally because of our strong unit economics. Domino's has a very efficient operating model that usually consists of a store around 1,500 square feet that is set up primarily for delivery and carryout. Stores basically need a cooler, a make line, an oven, and a point-of-sale system to run the store. The cost to open and operate these stores is moderately low, which works to the benefit of the franchisees and their profitability. The Domino's model provides strong cash-on-cash returns where margins improve as the market grows. We do consider our domestic and international stores to be one brand and one system. Overall, our Domino's international stores have the same core strategy as domestic stores, which is a primary focus on delivery and carryout. Internationally, we want customers to be able to recognize that Domino's is the same brand with the same logo and the same customer promise. Operationally, the stores have the same layout, same training opportunities, and the same focus on people. In addition, quality control is a big priority for us. The same core products are offered globally, and we work with the master franchisees to make sure that the local suppliers have been approved and meet our Domino's standards. I want to give you just a few highlights from last year, which was another excellent year for our business. In 2012, international accounted for over 52% of total Domino's global retail sales, which has grown at a 13% compound annual growth rate over the last 8 years. In September of last year, we marked a significant milestone when we opened our 10,000th store worldwide, in Istanbul, Turkey, which is one of our fastest-growing international markets. Along with our 10,000th store worldwide, we also reached another important milestone of opening our 5,000th international store. To stay on the same store growth theme, in the past 5 years, we've grown our international store count by 1,858 units, and our international store count has more than doubled since 2003. In our top 10 markets alone, we've identified potential for 2,700 additional stores. So we've got a long runway for growth as well. We project that the total international pizza market will grow by nearly $30 billion by 2021. So clearly there's a lot of room and opportunity for expansion in our brand around the world. In conclusion, our strong international master franchise model has provided excellent returns for our shareholders due to our consistent growth, minimal investment requirements, and low risk. I can now field any questions that you might have.
Great. Alvin?
Great. Thanks for doing the call and that great rundown. Just a quick question on international same-store sales. They've remained consistently strong, and I believe much of that is due to your strong value proposition, which is resonating well with consumers, you know, particularly in times of slow macroeconomic trends. So are you seeing anything competitively recently that makes you more worried about your ability to do well in a tough economy? And then as a follow-up, are there some things that are working well overseas that you can translate well into the United States as well?
Great. Thank you very much, Alan. We have delivered, strong same-store sales gains in the international division consistently. And, and as we look at it across regions, we've continued to deliver pretty balanced growth across each of our three operating regions in international. Asia-Pacific is one, Europe, Middle East, Africa is the other, and the Americas is our third operating region. And you correctly highlighted that, the key driver of that really is a focus on bringing a strong value proposition to the consumer. Certainly there's no business model that is recession proof, but it does give us a more recession resistant business model. And Europe is a great example of that, where there have been some very difficult economic times over the last couple of years, but we've continued to deliver consistent same store sales gains every quarter in that region. So as we look at our business and as we work with our franchisees, we're constantly focused on that value proposition. And when we look at our same-store sales gains, we're not just satisfied with same-store sales gains overall, but we are looking, very clearly to get the bulk of those gains out of order count growth. And the only way to get order count growth is to continue to deliver a strong value proposition that retains your existing customers and attracts new customers to your brand. Second part of your question was around things that are working well internationally and the opportunity to bring some of those things back domestically. We've really stepped up our efforts over the last couple of years at trying to share best practices really broadly across our system. And that is, from the U.S. to our international business, from international back to the U.S., and then across our international franchisees. Just to give you an example, the lava cakes that so many of our U.S. customers enjoy on our menu actually originated over in Turkey. So a good product idea that came up in one region of the world, we're porting it back, back to the domestic business. We take a look at, different things that are working around the world, with respect to product innovation, as I mentioned, with respect to promotions and other things that work, and we do our best to move those best practices around. And then finally, technology is a key piece of our business, not only domestically but internationally. And as we look to drive digital ordering across our system, we're taking learnings and best practices and sharing those around our system as well.
A question. You had a press release, recently came out, and you mentioned that you're going to take longer to make your pizzas. What was the rationale there? Also, we've been hearing some pretty good feedback coming from, consumers that they're responding well to your pan pizza. And I'm just wondering, assuming that's successful, what here in the U.S., what's the opportunity look like internationally?
Right. Well, the press release and the commercial that came out in the last couple of days, if you've seen it around pan pizza, really is focused on highlighting the quality cue in that product. And if you haven't tasted it, it's a fabulous product. It is it's a fresh dough product. It's handcrafted in the store, and that takes a little bit more time than pulling a frozen disc out of the freezer and baking it up. So we are focused on the quality of that product. It has been received very well, by our consumers, and that was certainly a big part of our results in the fourth quarter of last year on the domestic side of the business. We are just as I mentioned earlier about taking good ideas and porting them around the system. We're doing that with the pan product as well. Canada, our business in Canada launched the pan product back in the fourth quarter alongside the U.S. and had excellent results with our consumers in Canada. And we are looking at many of our markets around the world to launch pan pizza during 2013. It's a terrific product, and it's just resonating well with consumers everywhere we test it.
Great. I have two emailed questions. The first one is, what countries are you most excited about in terms of total store opportunity?
Great. Good question. When we take a look at, when I look at that question, I take a look at kind of where we are today and also where I see the forward potential, for the brand in the future. As we look at store opportunities, we've got some scale markets today that we expect to continue to have strong legs for growth in the future. The UK, where we closed the year last year at over 700 stores, we believe still has significant potential for store count growth going forward. India, which is our fastest growing market, we closed 2012 with 552 stores. We grew by 113 stores in 2012 alone in India. There is clearly a lot of forward runway for store growth in India. Turkey is another very strong performer for us. We closed 2012 with 284 stores in Turkey, which was up 64 stores during 2012. The brand is doing incredibly well there, and we see a significant amount of opportunity going forward. We're growing in, these are just a couple of examples of some developed and emerging markets that we're growing in. We also see significant upside potential in some of the markets where, frankly, we're small today. So as I look at Brazil, I look at China, I look at Russia, I look at Indonesia, we've got significant upside opportunity in those markets where, we've got large group, very large numbers of consumers with growing middle classes and showing a growing appetite for our product.
Great. The other question, as a follow-up to India, while India still has a huge opportunity, are you concerned at all about the slowdown in same-store sales trends lately? Still trending well, but has meaningful contributor for international segment same-store sales over the past. It's been a meaningful contributor over the last few years. And then, second question is. Just with China and, the KFC chicken scare, what are you kind of seeing on the ground there? Have things kind of normalized or from a consumer perspective or are consumers still concerned about kind of Western type of concepts?
Great. Well, I'll start with the first question around India. We're not surprised at all that same store sales growth have cooled a bit in India. It's still very, very strong, as you know, and very, very firmly in the double digits. But what we're doing in India is really accelerating the pace of store growth, and in many cases, those new stores come as we split territories of existing stores. So what we take a look at is, we really look at broadly what's happening in terms of the growth in retail sales for the brand, which is that combination of new store growth and same store sales. And we believe very strongly, in these markets where we have a leadership position, that we need to continue to double down, build stores, and reinforce our position competitively. We have some great stories in India, about really, growing the brand and penetration among the households in a particular trade area. We've got one store in India that has split eight times, as we look back over the last 10 years. And so one store has spawned, another eight stores serving the same trade area, and all of these stores are still performing at great unit-level economics. So that's the way we're looking at the business in India, and frankly, in our other markets as well, as we're looking to drive the overall retail sales growth and overall penetration per household in the trade areas where we compete. Second part of your question, was around China. As the news came out about the Yum scare, we certainly went back and doubled down in terms of our quality assurance efforts to make sure that we were, you know, all the suppliers that we were dealing with were meeting, you know, not only the local standards but our global brand standards as well, and we're confident in our position there. We haven't seen any slowdown whatsoever, in our business in China, and in fact, the business has accelerated over the course of the last, 6 months, even through this scare that Yum has gone through. So, obviously, we stay very focused on the quality of our suppliers, our commissary network, and what we're doing in our stores. Really haven't seen any impact, any downside impact on our business at all.
Good. Operator, do you want to check for questions in the queue?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. You should remember if you're on a speakerphone to turn your mute function off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that's star one to ask a question.
You can feel free to email me. I think we have time for another, maybe two, three questions. Here's just one email question. The difference in store economics between the U.S. versus developed versus developing countries.
Got it. Great. One of the things that we have been very, very focused on in the U.S. is improving our unit-level economics and driving unit-level EBITDA up for our domestic franchisees to get them more and more excited about growth. And we've made some very strong strides in that over the course of the last couple of years. Internationally, one of the reasons that you see this strong growth is that we do have terrific unit economics in a number of these markets. And if you look at the markets that are growing the fastest for us, which would include, India and Turkey as the two examples, they have among the strongest economics that we have anywhere in the world, where we're getting where our franchisees are getting, cash-on-cash paybacks, around the neighborhood of 2 years. We still have some very strong developed markets outside the U.S., like the United Kingdom, like Australia, like Japan, where we're getting very strong unit economics as well. And the way I look at it is, anytime we get cash on cash payback, coming in at 3 years or better, we're going to get strong growth in the markets. Now, when we get that cash on cash payback coming in at 2 years or better, we really get hyper growth in those markets because there's just a massive incentive for our franchisees to continue to put money into the brand.
Great. Operator, you want to check for questions?
Again, it is star one to ask a question, but we have no questions at this time.
Okay. Just another kind of follow-up email question on competition. Maybe over the last few months, have you seen an acceleration or a pretty similar sort of competitive landscape coming out of your competition? And I guess it's also related to kind of the promotions and discounts and advertising coming from your competitors.
And are you referring to the U.S. or international in that question?
That was international. Just because that's kind of the focus of the call. But if you have any insights
sure.
on the U.S., that's always very helpful too.
Well, internationally, the competitive landscape is pretty different, market to market. We've got one broad international competitor that we see in almost all the places we operate, which is Pizza Hut. Papa John's much smaller out there, but still present in a number of our markets. And then we obviously have a host of regional and local competitors that we face around the world. Competition is always intense in everywhere that we operate. But as I look back over the last 3 to 6 months, I have not seen meaningful changes in the ways that our competitors are coming to market against us. Certainly each promotional window brings a new challenge or opportunity for us, but no meaningful changes. Not surprisingly, in some of the markets where we are very successful, you know, we are starting to see competitors, you know, get more aggressive in investing and building stores. But, you know, that just requires us to elevate our game yet again. And back to one of the things I mentioned earlier, you know, around really doubling down and fortressing our strong markets where we play. You know, when we see competitive intrusion, you know, we are working actively alongside our franchisees to make sure that we're continuing to invest in the brand, to build stores, and to fortress the markets that we participate in.
And domestically, I think we have a similar situation, too, where half of the market share belongs to the national players, and the other half is the regionals and the locals. And if there has been any kind of a shift change in the last few years, it's been that the national players have begun to take market share from the regionals, which was something that hadn't happened for a long time. We attribute that not only to our size and, you know, how tough the economy has been for the smaller guys, but to our technology plays.
Good. Thank you. Just a final email question, if we don't have any other questions online. What's the international operating structure? Is it, you know, more centralized, decentralized? And what's the G&A associated with your international business?
We have on the structure, it's actually it's a little bit of a mix. You know, we have regional operating units that are positioned in the three operating regions that I mentioned earlier, Asia Pacific, Europe, Middle East, Africa, and also for the Americas. So we have field teams positioned out in the regions that work hand in hand with the markets around, you know, as I think about it, both from an offensive and a defensive capacity. You know, on the offensive front, it is really working with our franchisees to help them improve their profitability and grow their business. And then on the defensive front, it is brand protection. You know, so we have folks that are out there auditing our stores, auditing our supply chain centers, you know, auditing our suppliers. Then behind them here centrally, you know, we have some support teams that help in areas like human resources, like finance, strategy and insights, and some of the other back office support areas. And, you know, my philosophy is I want to have as much of our resource positioned out in the field where it can really move the needle on the business. And so that's really the axis upon which we try to orient the business. You know, I'm not going to comment today on a specific, you know, G&A dollar amount or percentage number, but, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we own very few hard assets in the international business. So we've got a lot of smart, experienced people, you know, with their iPhones and their laptops moving around the world helping us drive our business. So consequently, it gives us, you know, really nice leverage as we grow, you know, to really drive strong and stable cash flow, you know, back through to DPZ.
Yeah. That's great. Operator, were there any final questions before any last questions?
We did have one question from Shelly.
Okay.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Yes, I can,
yeah.
Shelly.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Lynn. Thanks, Greg and Alvin, for hosting the call, and thanks, Rich and Lynn, for your time. I was just hoping to understand a little bit more behind what you were describing, Rich, vis-a-vis the opportunity, I guess, in incremental margins and incremental flow through of the international business. I mean, clearly, I think, you know, the way I've been thinking about the stock is as you grow your units 4-6% and get, you know, and AUVs ramp, you get that 3%. Well, I guess plus same store sales, you get that 3%. But I'd imagine the flow through on that incremental revenue would be very, very high. Can you maybe just give us a sense as to what that looks like over time, that sort of incremental margin, maybe? And thank you.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, today, when we take a look at our business. You know, the profits in our business, you know, really are generated primarily by the franchise royalties. you know, as you described. So, you know, 91% of our 2012 international operating income, you know, came through the royalty side of the business. You know, we do own a few hard assets, as I mentioned, you know, 6 supply chain centers, 4 of which are located in Canada, but it is not part of our strategy to continue to grow the supply chain or hard asset side of our business. We'll obviously run that to support the business in Canada, but the you know, as we look at our store count growth and our same store sales growth, you know, it really is, around driving and increasing that that franchise royalties number.
Okay, great. But is there a way that we should think about incremental, like flow through should be kind of 80-90% type of thing, or over? I'm not saying specifically in near term. I'm just kind of thinking longer term trajectory, or maybe kind of historical average if you have that off the top of your head. If not, that's fine.
Sure.
I'm looking at Rich saying I don't think that we've really talked specifically about that, but you know, he definitely hit on the main point. You can drive incremental margin improvement in this business because of the point that he made earlier. You don't have to hire that many more people as you build the infrastructure. So there's room for margin expansion because we don't have a heavy load for CapEx or assets.
Understood. So, thank you very much.
Yeah, totally makes sense. On behalf of Alvin and myself, Rich, Lynn, thank you very much for the time. Very helpful, very insightful. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks to all of you who joined. We appreciate your interest in Domino's.
Great. Thank you. Take care.
And once again, everyone, that does conclude today's conference call. We'd like to thank you again for your participation.